You're listening to Radio Mayapur with the best devotional, meditation, kirtan music, and inspirational podcast. This is Radio Mayapur.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another podcast of Radio Mayapur. Today, I'm very, very lucky and fortunate to be here in a Gold Coast, a beautiful place, a paradise, I would say, 2,000 acres farm. It's called New Govardhan, where we have 100 cows, we have a yoga studio, massage, and we have three restaurants in the city, or four restaurants, including my guest today is Devagora Haridas, born in Malaysia in Penang, born in 1969 in Malaysia. He studied in Queensland in science, he did university. And I know him from a very long time because he was before in Mayapur with his family. He's a very good friend of mine and I admire him for his wonderful quality. He is a great musician, besides all the other qualities, which I am not aware. So welcome to Radio Mayapur podcast, Devagora Hari. It's a great pleasure to have you with us today.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
So, Prabhuji, tell us a little bit about your life when you were a child, where you grew up. Because you're born in Malaysia. I don't know, your father was not Malaysian.
No.
Your mother was not Malaysian.
No.
So how you happened to be born in Malaysia is a question in my mind.
That's the first question. So my father was in the Australian Air Force.
Oh.
And his father, I mean, there's a story behind that. His father was actually killed when he was 2 years old in the Air Force in an accident in Brisbane. And he joined the Air Force, he thinks, just to sort of find his father. Like, his father went to the Air Force one day and never came back. So he was always this, what's his Air Force
he thing? He disappeared.
So, yeah, his father, you know. So he was 2 years
how
old.
He
so
disappeared?
He
didn't know. How he disappeared?
He just, there was an accident.
In the plane?
Back in the day, they didn't have many, you know.
Instruments.
He was on the ground. They didn't have all the health and safety. So they used to put the guy up against the plane and the guy just sitting there holding the forklift. Foot slipped. Anyway, smash. So he was killed. So anyway, he's not really a military guy, but somehow he went to the Air Force and he was posted to Malaysia.
Okay.
There was a big Australian Air Force base there. And so anyway, I was
in Penang, which is an island south of. Beautiful place. We have a nice temple
Incredible.
There.
Yeah. There's a big temple there now. Yeah. Yeah. There's not much, but back in the day, Malaysia and Australia were quite close. And they had a big Air Force base there. So we were there for 3 years. I was born that time. So I think I was there for a couple of years. So anyway, we came back to Australia and it was just like a normal, whatever normal is, like, you know, going to school, family. Yeah. I had just myself and one sister. Looking back, there wasn't really any spiritual life. There was no church.
I mean,
there
was
nothing
Christian,
like that.
They were not following anything.
They were both brought up Christian, but they didn't have a great experience and they just sort of, they gave us the qualities and the morals and
some
values. That was good, you know. But as far as God, like actually serving
God,
who is the Lord, there's never fucking nothing, you know. So
living far away.
Yeah, never even talked about. Amazing, right? So kind of.
Okay.
So then when I went through school and this Malaysia thing was always sort of in the background. There were these things they brought back from Malaysia and some of the food that we're cooking was like the Malaysian food. It's like these curries and stuff.
Nice.
I was always into that from,
good,
you know, when childhood and that. Yeah. So I always
smell,
loved
the taste.
Yeah. Like laksa is like my favorite, you know, food. You could eat it every day. So something came into me from then.
Nice.
But anyway, I went through school and then I went to university just because, like, you know, didn't know what I was doing, whatever. So my mother said, you know, I'll go to university. I did university. Studied engineering. I didn't like that much. So anyway, I just went into science just to do something. I finished that. But I guess about through second, third year of science, one of my friends, he was into different, you know, things and different books and things. And then we got into, you know, consciousness expanding, so-called substances.
Something esoteric.
Not really. Yeah, all of these stuff, you know.
We got into
that. So I think
experimenting with consciousness.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly,
yeah,
all
yeah,
that
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
That everybody does.
Normally.
Yeah, so when I remember in the last year of university, one of my lecturers said, what are you doing? You're going to do honours? Are you going to go and work here? And I said, no. I said, I'm finishing this because, you know, my parents gave me so much money. I didn't want to let them down. All right, I finish it. After that, I don't want to know anything about this. I'm just going to go and just play music, try to find that, you know, that thing. I think, you know, music, my father was really into the Beatles, and he had this huge reel-to-reel tape back in the 70s. And so I was always listening to music, and the Beatles especially. There was something about that music. It was like, where did that come from? That's out of this world. You know, that was, I guess, my connection with spirituality, which
that's true.
Was probably all I had, really.
Well, eventually, George Harrison made the famous disc, well, which was on a hit parade for 6 months all over Europe and America. With Hare Krishna song. My Sweet Lord.
My Sweet Lord, So I was listening to all that stuff as a kid. And So I guess when I left university, and I'd always sort of played music. I think from about 13, I took up guitar, and I was just kind of, after school, playing all, you know, that was a kind of an obsession. I got obsessed with guitar and all that whole world of guitar people.
Wonderful.
So I was really into that. And so after uni, I said, that's it. I'm just going to, you know,
become
go into this consciousness and become a musician. And, you know, there was some seeking in there, and there was some just degraded, just, you know, obviously. Just all that stuff.
Yeah, the world of music at the time, the hippie revolution all these things. So naturally, we experience different things.
Yeah. But I mean, coming to how I actually came into Krishna consciousness, like we had booked a rehearsal room where pretty much most of the money was just to pay for this rehearsal room. Just some, you know, getting money from the doll, whatever, and just focusing on that. And then one of the guys that was in this, it was a big warehouse, all different rooms, and there were artists, there were musicians, there were painters and poets and all these kind of people in Brisbane, you know.
Art.
That it was an art place. And that's what I kind of like, okay, I want to get into that scene because I've just been in science and so forth. And he said, down the road, there's a Hare Krishna place and they give free food every day.
Wow.
So I just thought, okay.
Free that food, sounds good.
That sounds good.
Interesting.
So I used to just go there every day. And looking back, I know the music was like Agni Dev and that Temple of the Mind album.
Yes.
You know, the Temple Mandira. With all the Siddhas and the Sirods and everything. And, you know, the music was just, wow, this music is from another world. And then the prasadam was simple prasadam, but every day I was taking prasadam. And then gradually, I got some books and things like that. And actually the first book I got was I moved into a share house and I moved into this room, and the guy that was moving out said, there's one book there. I don't want, you can have that. And he just left it on the floor of the cupboard. Okay. Right. And that book was Coming Back.
Coming Back.
So that was the first book I read, Coming Back. Yeah.
So start explaining about the soul leaving the body and can reincarnate into another body and according to action, reaction, which is a simple book, a small 100 pages maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
But beautiful.
Beautiful.
Beautiful written.
And I was always already being exposed to different books, but more like sort of, you know, fluffy sort of philosophy and the soul and all this sort of stuff. But this was like scientific. I was like, okay, the soul doesn't change. You know, all the Bhagavad Gita second chapter and it's a beautiful book. This from brain surgeons who experience the soul leaving the body and stuff like that.
So, but did you come in contact some devotee as well? Somebody you talked to or somebody?
Yeah, well, at the Food for Life, there was definitely devotees there.
Okay.
And I would talk to them sometimes. I remember a bit later on, even Ajita was there. He would come sometimes. I remember even early, very before I joined, and he was telling me, you know, kind of, praising me or something, you know how they do with new people, not everybody's interested, like you're interested, this is, but you should take this up, you're different to all these people, you actually have an interest in this. So Ajita was there from from the very first day.
But I just want to go a little back. You had a band and you were playing music as well, and you were traveling around Australia or New Zealand.
Not so much traveling, but a little bit, mainly in around Brisbane.
What was his band name, for example? Do you remember it?
Well, it was called Devoid, which is kind of like...
Devoid?
Yeah, a Buddhist kind of idea, devoid of all things.
No problem. Yeah. What type of music you play?
It was like early 90s, so it was all that like Nirvana era.
Oh, okay.
You know, all that stuff. It was like the more heavier sort of stuff. But just all like Beatles influence, just music. Like.
But you were writing text also?
I was writing the songs, yeah. I always liked writing songs, even from... Maybe when I was 14, I think I wrote the first song. That's probably beautiful. Wrote so many songs, but they gradually get more spiritual. I always felt that the music was kind of like a pathway of how it could take me to something higher.
Higher, of course.
I knew that the university wasn't taking me higher. I remember one of the head lecturers at the university, the professor.
Hmm.
And one time I met him on a Friday night, you know, that Friday night, you know, everyone would go out and party, whatever. And the staff club, it must have had a joined toilet or something where mm-hmm. the student section and the staff student mm-hmm. shared the same toilet.
Right.
Don't want to get into the toilet thing. But anyway, I saw him there and he was completely drunk. And I thought, he's the professor and he's the one. When you're at school, you think at university, they must have some higher knowledge.
Of course.
They must have higher values and everything.
But then
when I saw him and I talked to him more later, and he was completely lost in life. He didn't know what he was doing. And I actually found he was the biochemistry professor. I actually found out that he was getting pure ethanol from the biochemistry labs and drinking that. So he was actually a complete alcoholic. And he was like the professor. He was like the leading person. I mean, that's a small example, but bit by bit, I was trying different things. Like, yeah, exactly. And even in music, I came to meet some famous musicians. And I remember once meeting backstage some guy, and it was like talking to him, like, what's the meaning? Like, what's your goal? Where do you want to get to ultimately in life? Whatever. Right. So, I just want to be sitting on the back of a boat, strumming a guitar with a beer in my hand. That's my perfection, you know. And I just...
What the waste of life.
So whereas music was like up there, gradually it just became... You know, when I actually got into it and saw the people and their qualities, then I realized it wasn't...
I think there were very few people who were into spiritual upgrading, you know, there. Because sound is very powerful.
Yeah.
The sound is something which can influence your soul, for sure.
Yeah.
If you listen to spiritual vibrations or mantras and stuff, we definitely know that now.
Yeah.
At that time, we thought that these people were their head. Of course, some people had. Some spiritual touch.
Something.
Santana, in the end, it became more spiritual. And the music it was doing. Of course, we could say the music is inspired by God in some way.
Yeah.
And of course, the modes of material nature.
Yeah, that's mixed in with the modes, isn't it?
It puts a different shade. But
I
was walking the other last year in Moulambar. It said, book afford the mind, afford intelligence, but sound, for the soul.
For the soul, right? Yeah.
And they were selling instruments inside the shop.
Yeah.
But it's true.
It's true, right? It says, isn't it?
That's correct.
What is it? The music is all the speaking in the spiritual world is songs. Yeah, right? Songs. Like it's, so it is the language of the soul. But
So wonderful.
Yeah.
So, but how many years you had this band that you were?
There was four of us, and we were writing music and playing, and you know, we had some little success. We played with some bands who are kind of famous now.
So you were back.
We were like little bit
introduction, but to the band.
very like that we would do. I think I had two bands, but during that second band, that was when I started to just become more and more interested in spiritual life and Christian consciousness. And I met some devotees in Sydney who gave me some beads, and I was already, it's okay.
No problem. Yeah, but that's wonderful. What was the name of the second band?
Devoid was the second band.
Devoid was the second band.
Yeah, second. I think Ministers was the first band. Yeah.
So that band was also very successful?
I mean, in some Brisbane, degree. I mean, to some degree.
Brisbane, but I want to ask you before I forget that you have to give me some of your song. We can put them in Radio Mayapur. Some of the spiritual songs. Yeah. If you have 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll put them on because people like to hear your music.
We can definitely.
Anybody know this music.
Yeah, we've had a band here in the community.
Drive. Yeah, I remember a few years ago you came and you were playing when we were doing pizza for everybody.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, you did the pizza during COVID, right? Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
We're stuck here for 1 year.
So I know. A great fortune. I know.
Yeah, you and beautiful place. I always so like this place. It's wonderful. So, but then at which point you completely decide to dedicate yourself into Krishna consciousness, because that's a step, let's say, from knowing, having knowledge a little bit, and maybe some books or some prasadam.
Definitely,
was inspiring. But at one point in your heart, you felt like, I need to make some change in my life, which can give me what I want to achieve, the success. Yeah.
Definitely. It was gradual, but at a certain point, I started just chanting the mantra all the time in my head.
Oh.
And I would just walk around just chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna in my head. I would even tell some of my friends, you know, I'm chanting in my head, and they would think it was a bit strange. but to me, I guess I was starting to, I was really suffering mentally, you know, because you're smoking the ganja you're in trying to achieve this and that, and it's just unlimited anxiety and whatever,
suffering.
And you don't know what the meaning of life is, you know.
Yeah,
so
you're lost.
Yeah,
you don't know which direction to go. No. To find the truth.
But chanting that mantra, I just felt so much peace inside, like just by chanting. So I would just chant continually, like just walk around, just in my mind, just chanting. So I always had that. I had that experience from the beginning, and also, I started reading like spiritual books, which for me was unusual because, like I said, I'd never been to church, never done anything spiritual until I was like 20 and I left uni and did that. I started reading William Blake and all the English poets. They're writing about God and nature and God, you know, what's his name? Tennyson, Alfred Tennyson, Wordsworth. Like that was where I sort of started my spiritual journey, I guess, reading those poets. And I felt some like bliss, you know, from hearing they were glorifying the Lord and the Lord in the world and nature, and you know, it was amazing. So then I went on to, like, you know, all those books you read, Carlos Castaneda, and then the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and then there was all of these different spiritual books, and gradually came to read Prabhupada's books, and I was getting some taste, like some feeling from all of these books.
Of course.
I was feeling some elevated consciousness.
There is something.
But when I read Prabhupada's Gita, it was another whole level. So it was, I could tell it was the same thing. It was this divine essence that was uplifting my consciousness, pulling me out of the illusion
suffering,
and suffering that all of these anxiety. Other books were doing. But it was just, you know, another level. I remember trying to read Bhagavad Gita and I couldn't, you know, Jrita, Rashtra, Uva,
there's so many names,
stuff.
They're
but,
weird.
But,
you know?
But just
beginning.
Yeah, but just reading it, the potency, like, so I was convinced that in these books, there's something. There's
Even
something
if you don't understand, let me read it.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So there's something in there that's the same as all these other spiritual books, but it's just more.
Much more.
It's just much more.
And also because Prabhupada explained who is the personality of God.
Yeah,
and it's called Krishna and his beautiful form.
Yeah.
And this is mind blowing, you know, to think like, what? How is
possible? And actually, when I was in Sydney, along this journey somewhere, maybe 6 months before I joined the temple, we went to a road trip to Sydney and I got the first canto of Bhagavatam.
Wow.
So I'd already read Bhagavad Gita a bit. And that really blew my mind. I went to Brisbane Temple at Sunday Feast and I said, I've got the first one. Can I get the next one? Because I knew it was a series.
Yeah.
And the devotee said, you can't just buy one.
You have to buy the whole set.
You have to buy the whole set. Well, I can do that. So she said, we have this Krishna book. You can take that.
Yeah,
so then I read Krishna book. And I remember going to my parents' house. They're living in the Gold Coast, and just for a whole weekend or week or more, just reading Krishna book. And I just felt like so blissful, so happy.
Devagorari, tell me, how was your reaction of your parents when you joined Hare Krishna?
When I joined Hare Krishna, my parents were...
joined in 1994, correct? In which place you joined?
I joined in Brisbane.
In Brisbane, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Where the Fifth Life was.
Where the temple is.
At the Graceville Temple
Graceville.
That we had back in there. Yeah, Ajita was vice president,
okay.
So he was running the place and the ashram and everything.
Nice.
And there was a devotee called Granta Priya, who's still around. He's in Brisbane. And he was very gentle with me, brought me to the temple. And I remember the first day, coming the first night in the temple, and, you know, sleeping there, and he put some incense on. And, oh, wow, I was like,
I'm in paradise.
So happy. I just felt the peace and the spirituality of that place.
Beautiful.
Yeah, but I I thought that because I was looking for this for a long time. I didn't realize it. My whole life, obviously, I was looking for this.
But your parents took it in a nice way?
They say,
this guy's crack.
So. Well, I made the mistake of, I thought that I would just be able to tell them.
Sure.
Because they're my parents. Right? They're just part of me.
They love me.
They're my family. They love me.
Sure.
I've found that this thing I've been looking for my whole life. And they just like couldn't. They're just like, nah.
No way.
They took me. I went to their house on the Gold Coast. And the whole weekend, they just, I'd only been in the temple 1 week. They just preached to me like.
Maybe you were a little fanatic at that time.
A little. Exactly.
I know, I had the same experience.
Like, yeah. So I just thought, no.
We thought we'd give you all this knowledge. Yeah. Now I know this.
I know. Yeah. But I've been looking for years. They weren't looking.
No, they weren't looking.
So yeah, they really went into it. And I pretty much just separated, didn't have much to do with him. I lived in the temple Brahmachari for like 5 years.
What about your sister?
A little bit. Like I would go for their family functions and whatever, but I couldn't relate to them. They're all, you know, eating meat and so forth. I mean, once you've been chanting for a while, then you kind of, but even now we go there, but they don't do it. Like if I say I'm coming, they say, oh, hang on, we're having dinner. Just come in half an hour. They're very sensitive. They know everything now. 30 years.
They respect you now.
They respect it.
Oh, nice.
Now they're very respectful and they're very happy.
And of course, in the scriptures said that if you become a devotee or pure devotee, so many generations in front, so many generations before, they'll become liberated. That means they will have access to the spiritual knowledge in their future life, maybe.
I think.
But they took prasadam, right?
Oh, so much prasadam. They've taken so much prasadam. And, you know, they've been to the temple. You know, for the kids' first grains, we got them to come to the temple. That's about it. They went.
You know, the amazing things of Krishna consciousness and Krishna is that he gives us free will. He won't force us again coming when AK-47 and say, you bastard, you love me, otherwise I'm going to kill you. You know, dude does that, right? Yeah, he's always like, okay, whatever you want. You want to stay in the material world, stay. You want to play some more game, play some more game. Yeah. When you're ready, I'm here. You know, you want to love me, I am here. I love you. And my door is open and non-judgmental and non-absolute love, unconditional love. So. Yeah. Everybody has to take his own time and his own, you know, he's going through different experience in life.
Yeah.
And when they at one point will click and say, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
You know, how many lives I've been here in this rotten place and trying to enjoy.
Definitely.
So nice. So, but then when you joined the temple, what service you did?
So we were doing like, you know, collecting, going out, collecting, doing some stickers, collecting and.
Distributing books also?
Yeah, distributing books, something, not so much.
Okay.
And I remember that I think I'd been in the temple a few months and they said, we're going to go to Darwin and distribute the T-shirts in the pubs and whatever. And I didn't want to go, but they said, all right, I'll go. So that was very austere, new devotee. Course, but it was still like fundraising things. Yeah. But I mean, I did a bit of that, but also I really liked cooking. And there was a devotee called Yogeshwar, who's a Arisan Brahmana from Ramuna, where this, not the Sakshi Gopal, what's the deity? Kshikshu Gopinath deity. Yeah, he's from that place. Oh, nice. And so I used to help him every Saturday cook the feast and learned all the way. So I got a love for cooking and that from him. And then Radhikatma came, I think after a couple of years, I was doing, you know, visiting Indian people and doing some programs and.
In fact, I should say listener that Devagorari is running a wonderful restaurant called Lucid. Yesterday we went and took lunch with His Holiness Banu Swami and Ramai Swami.
Yeah.
And we had some nice panini sandwich and beautiful salad. And Maharaj took, you know, different things. So this is very beautiful what you're doing, actually. And also your family that are helping you. I mean, your children.
Yeah, they've helped.
They're all like very sweet. Yeah. And nice to, you know, that they're helping you.
Yeah,
because Srila Prabhupada said we can conquer Australia by distributing prasadam, and you are fulfilling the desire of Srila Prabhupada.
Well, Krishna, Prabhupada's mercy, isn't it? I mean.
But at one point you came to Mayapur, because I remember you were in Mayapur and you were part of the school.
Yeah.
If I'm not wrong, you were the principal or something like that.
Yeah, for a little while.
For a little while.
I came.
So which year it was?
I think, I came first in 96. I first came to India, Prabhupada Centennial Year.
Yeah.
And that was when I first went on Guru Maharaj's safari, Japtak Maharaj, Guru Maharaj, you know. And So I came, I think, a few times from the temple. And then I think in 2004, I went there for 6 months and I was teaching in the school.
Yeah. What were you teaching? Nice.
I was teaching science and things. Science. Like they wanted that. There's always, they always want maths and science teachers. Yeah. Everyone wants to teach Shastra, but the, yeah, you know, the school, they have the curriculum, Cambridge curriculum.
Cambridge curriculum, yeah.
So there. And then I think in 2009 early, I came and I was helping Guru Maharaj's like Jopius archives. I was doing that service for a few years there, doing that, developing the, you know, the different tape CDs and things in the back in the day of CDs and archiving Guru Maharaj's things. Then I got involved with the school there as well. So that was
You were happy there?
Yeah, I was happy in Mayapur. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, my family situation was hard to make money, and
today.
Yeah.
For all the grias, I feel great pain in my heart sometimes because I see so many sincere devotees dedicated to spiritual life.
Yeah.
But there is no way you can difficult to maintain your family. I see even some Bengali devotees end up driving a rickshaw, electric rickshaw.
I think I was getting 12,000 rupees a month salary, and the rent was 15,000 on the apartment. So then we came back here, do some work, go back, and then. But I always love Mayapur. Obviously, it's just.
So, what's your future project from here? What's your vision of?
Well,
the future,
because we've got a place here. Ajita Prabhu is happy to give us a place here on the farm.
Nice.
And we're fixing that up a bit and making a place. We have three small children now. Nice. They're just going in Gurukul.
Nice.
And it's really nice to see them. You know, they're at the temple all the time. And, you know, you saw my kids there this morning singing kirtan. Yeah. I'm doing the restaurant as long as Krishna wants me to. I'll do the restaurant. I'm praying that, you know, I'd like to be relieved of that. I've been doing teaching regularly with the Krishna Pad, like the new devotees, and just talking with them about Krishna consciousness in a very sort of organic way and very like down to earth.
Yeah, because these people are all backpacker, woofer,
they're sincere, exactly. They're just like I was, or just like we were when we were.
Like we were, so we can relate to that.
We can relate to that.
We can easily, slowly, bring them into some Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, so I'm enthused about that, and I also did a course in Vedic astrology, a 2-year intensive course with a guru with like a 1,000-year-old parampara. They were actually the astrologers for the Puri kings, Pratapudra's time, originally from Somnath Temple in Gujarat. But that was something I dabbled with, but then I really sort of 3 years ago got into this, you know, lot of study. So now I'm starting to do a lot of readings. I've probably done, I don't know, a couple of hundred readings with different people just in the last year. And the devotees really like it because it's very shastric. It's not a sort of it's really from Parashra Shastra, but it's from a guru. So I've always wanted something where I've always felt the kind of want to like help people and counsel people, especially in relationship and things like that. But I didn't really have a context or a medium or a framework to do that. Mm-hmm. I studied counseling a bit, but I didn't really think that there was that much there for devotees. But the Vedic astrology that I've learned from this guru, I've found it's, you know, it's really like opens up, you know, what is the karmas and what people are dealing with and things. And
can you explain a little bit the concept of Vedic astrology and what is the difference between Vedic astrology and Western astrology?
Well, one of the big differences is just the sidereal compared to the tropical zodiac. So the sidereal zodiac is Vedic astrology means that if your ascendant sign is Leo, when you were born, Leo, the actual constellation was on the horizon ascending. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the Western astrology, they have a tropical zodiac where the tropical and the sidereal, they were the same at about 200 AD. But in the Western system, they just fixed that and said, oh, we're not going to change. They just made March the 21st, the equinox.
Right.
So they said, that's the start of Aries. Go forward 30 days, that's the start of Taurus. And just like
that. So it's not very accurate, would you say?
It's accurate in terms of the relationship relative, the planets relative to each other are still the same. So the aspects are still the same. Obviously, the transits of the the planets transiting through various signs, they're the same. The Vedic is very, it gives a, you know, from my experience, which is, I don't have huge experience with the Western, so I can't say too much about that. But the Vedic gives a very, like, it's more to do with the spiritual, it's connected to the universe, mm-hmm. whereas the Western is more about the worldly experience,
right.
because it's relative. Yeah, so I mean,
so you would say that it gives more, detailed information about your personality and your relationship, and also at the same time, because I think they also take the aspect of the moon more important than the sun. So the what is connected to your spirituality, to your mind, and your am I correct?
The moon is more important than the sun.
Not more important. As the moon as well.
Yeah, it's true in the Western. They say wherever the sun is, they say that's your sign.
Yeah,
but it's not even where the sun was when you're born, because it's a tropical system. So the equinox processes. So over 1,000 years, it's about 40 degrees difference. The main difference I would say is when you learn in parampara, right?
Explain what is parampara.
Parampara means
a chain of disciples.
Yeah,
succession.
A chain of disciplic succession. So, like, we learned from our gurus, who learned from Prabhupada, and like
from
that,
his guru and go all the way to Krishna.
All the way to Krishna. So, in Vedic astrology, it's a similar thing. If you learn from parampara, you learn from a guru who's learned from his guru how to apply these teachings in his life, and you get all of the techniques and the skills of how to apply it. This is one thing. This is probably the second thing. Let me say the first thing first. Sure. The first thing is it's based on Parashara Shastra, Briha Parashara Hora Shastra. So Parashara is the father of Vyasadeva, we know that. So he gave a Shastra that says, this is how you can map out the karma of an individual. And it's a big Shastra. And he starts with, you know, Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Lord. He's manifested everything. Then the arrangements of these planets is telling you how the karmas are coming on the individual soul. And then he just goes into detail, more and more and more detail. So Vedic astrology is Shastric. You'll say, someone will come to you and say, do you think I'll have children? Well, you're not saying this and that. You say, oh, maybe check. This, maybe that. You're saying, Parashara Muni says, look at the fifth Lord.
Yes.
Is the fifth Lord combust? Is it debilitated? Is it in a bad house? Children will be very hard to have. So like that, you're referencing Shastra. That's the first thing. And the second thing is being in parampara means whatever's worked, right? Whatever works. So like you're doing carpentry, you're doing anything. What works? Well, you do motorbikes, right? You do mechanics and things like that. So you pass that on to your sons, right?
Of course.
But you've passed on what works for you, right?
Of course.
Yeah. So you imagine if you have like 200 generations of astrologers, and they're seeing hundreds and tens of they're seeing millions of people.
Yeah, their
and they're saying this is what my guru tells me. He says this really works. This rule is really works. So out of all of the Shastra, then they tell you that this is what really works. This gives you an insight. This is really important. So the guru tells you how to apply it and what's and also how not to apply it. Because a lot of astrologers, that I've had many people come to me and say, oh, I went and saw this astrologer and they just said, oh, yes, you're destined, your life is terrible and you're going to be this and that. Make very big absolute statements that really disturb the person,
people,
you know.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. They tell you what not to do. You can't something in the chart and say that's definitely
way.
Well, that also, but just there's so many things in a chart.
Yeah,
there's the D1, the D2. There's multiple other charts, D2, D4, D9, D12. There's divisional charts. So you might see something in the main chart, but then you don't know. And you think, oh, that means that. But you don't know. In the D60, it's something else. It's the opposite. So you say, I'm seeing this. Try this mantra and tell me, how does that work for you? What is that? That's how you apply it in an intelligent way.
Right.
You can't just say, that's definitely this. Because in the Shastra, it's like, this means death of the husband. But then there's something else in the chart that means, husband will have long, long life. Exactly. Because it's a soup of thousands of karmas.
Balance. And the fact that, like you explained, that the parampara means these people, hundreds of people who had experience in astrology are telling you the key point and they're explaining you how to interpret this and how to read it.
Yeah.
So that's very, very, amazing,
Yeah, it's wonderful. I think for me, like even in my astrology, I have what's called the Parampara Yoga. which is I like parampara. Like to me, it has to be in parampara.
It's like the foundation of your life.
Well, it's I mean, it's Jupiter and Ketu together. They're different yogas, different planets. But Jupiter Ketu gives you. So anyway, I was never attracted to astrology because it just always seems so wishy-washy.
You know,
like
about parampara, it comes to my mind how one day a devotee came to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, who is the guru of Srila Prabhupada, and say, oh, there is one person who want to tell you about this book he wrote. And Bhaktisiddhanta asked, okay, what is his parampara?
Right.
What is his sampradaya?
Yeah,
he went and asked. He said, no, he doesn't have any sampradaya. He doesn't have any parampara. He said, I don't want to see him. I don't waste my time.
That's right. Yeah.
So obviously, it's like you say, okay, I want to become a doctor. And you go to and say, okay, where did you study?
Oh, which medical school did you go?
I just wrote a lot of books and YouTube. And I know I can do a brain operation. I say, okay, thank you very much. You will take this guy to the mental hospital, you know. Anyhow, it is amazing, you know, that, you know, we are very fortunate to be in association of devotees and I'm so happy that now you are closer to the devotees here, and naturally you will be able to help many, many other people as well. Because that's the goal of Lord Chaitanya.
That's it, isn't
it? Sri Chaitanya Manovistami, his desire is that we give this mercy and the chanting of the only name to everybody, whoever can take it.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we should be like a doctor, like you say, in a very soft way.
Carefully.
And very carefully, because sometimes if you get too much medicine, the patient died. So I'm very happy. And Devagarari, I can talk to you for many, many hours. And I enjoy talking to you. But tell me, you know, okay, what is the... what is the goal of human life?
To attain love for the Supreme Lord, Sri Radha Krishna.
So who is God?
Krishna.
Krishna. And what is the perfection of life?
Perfection of life is to be always engaged in serving Krishna and serving his devotees, assisting some of his devotees.
And there is any parting message you like to give for the audience or Radio Mayapur? Any message specific you feel like you should tell them something important?
It's just that life will be very difficult in this material world. Don't think it will always be easy.
Of course.
There will be things that just feel like you cannot go through them. But if you always take shelter of the holy name, mantra, and just try to surrender to Krishna, try to see what Krishna is doing, the path, then you're always safe. And you'll always get through that, whatever that difficulty
is. In other words, you should have faith that the Lord will never give us a test that we cannot overcome.
Yeah.
You know, if we have faith, then okay. Yeah. If you put me in this situation, it's because maybe I have to learn this lesson.
Faith, but also like an experience. Like if we keep chanting, we'll get we'll get some distance from the problem, and we'll realize. I recently was doing a reading, astrology reading for a devotee. The next day I said, oh, how was it? Did it help you with it, like getting some feedback? He said, you know what? Yeah, he said, it really helped me. It helped me realize that this is difficulties I'm having. This is something that's happening to me. It's not me.
Means it's related to the body and the mind, not to the soul. But the soul is experiencing this passage of life.
If we keep chanting, we'll keep that perspective, though. This is something that's happening to me. But if we give up that chanting,
then we end up in a soup.
We totally identify with this is me, exactly.
And we're lost in Maya. That's a beautiful message. So thank you so much for being with us today. It's a great pleasure. And I hope to meet you again in the future. And we can do more podcasts together.
My great fortune, Prabhu. Thank you.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda ki jai. Good Premanande.
You're listening to Radio Mayapur with the best devotional, meditation, kirtan music, and inspirational podcast. This is Radio Mayapur.